Contracts are being signed. Teams are pledging their allegiance with conferences. Kind of sounds like the failed alliance from years past. And we've got a new playoff system before the first one really even gets going. Plus, we'll give you the latest on the ground from Tuscaloosa as Kalen DeBoer settles in at Alabama. And what just happened with Nebraska and their athletic director? We break all of that down and more right here on the Three Technique.
One man. Goodbye! Hello, Heisman! 20, 25, 30,
35, 40, 45, 50,
45. There goes Davis!
Oh, my God!
Davis is going to run it all the way back! Auburn's going to win the football game!
They get it to Rogers. They get it back now to the 30. They're down to the 20. All the band is out on the field! He's going to go into the end zone!
Four-man Alabama rush. Got him. No, they didn't. Oh, my gracious.
Yep.
How about that?
Yes. Welcome in, everybody. Another episode of the Three Technique, a college football podcast at the intersection of the X's and O's and the Jimmies and the Joes. Fellas, we just surpassed over 100,000 views over on YouTube. The Jimmies and the Joes flocking to watch the fellas record content. Mock drafts have been popping off. Garrett, you're the engine behind all of this. How fun was it to open up the analytics the other day and see, huh, that's a brand new number with a lot of zeros staring at us?
Yeah, we added a whole digit. That's nice. We got from 5 to 6. So here's the official long journey to 7. It's going to probably take us a little bit longer than it took us to get to 6, but that's all good. No, it's been exciting. It's been really, really fun. And obviously appreciate all the viewers, everybody who's out there who's been tuning in and enjoying our content. And we've been kind of branching out, doing a lot of different things this off season. And so we're excited to keep trying some new stuff and have a couple new ideas coming down the pipes for you pretty soon. So it's fun. Stay tuned. And thanks for hanging out with us.
Trey, I misspelled a word in a tweet, I guess yesterday, that a subscriber that I now am friends with quickly came to our aid and said, hey, man, you might consider changing that. It's really cool to see the Jimmies and the Joes are looking out for us. They've got our backs, even when I'm trying to get my hair cut.
Yeah, thanks for having our back on that, guys. Really appreciate it. And it's been really cool to see this little community develop out of almost nothing at the start, right? Like, we didn't have anything when we started this. It was just an idea around a table at a restaurant, and here we are. It's pretty cool to see how far we've come.
Oh, well, we're not slowing down anytime soon. That's for sure. Our commitment to keep creating content obviously rolls all off season long. We're doing weekly episodes on Apple, Spotify, and YouTube. Plus, we've got daily videos rolling out thanks to Garrett and the editing wizard that he is. So check us out at 3TechPod, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, anywhere you get podcasts and college football content. We are right there providing it. Fellas, 14-team playoff. It seems all but certain that we're headed down that road. We've talked about it kind of ad nauseum at this point, but between our last episode and this one, when we took a break from discussing the politics of it all, reports came out that, hey, this is probably about to happen as far as being signed into legislation, right? Wouldn't start till 2026, so we'll have 2 years of 12-team playoffs that we still get to enjoy, but with all the major conferences signing deals with the College Football Playoff Committee, Notre Dame as well. Trey, it really feels like this is all but a done deal. It officially has to go to a vote once a new TV deal is structured, but I mean, the writing's on the wall at this point.
Yeah, and it's really unfortunate because we didn't even get to see a 12-team playoff on the field before we decided to expand to 14. And that's really frustrating to me. I think we've talked about it ad nauseum on this show. I think 12 is perfect. And we looked back all the way to 1998. You can read articles. Just shout out to the ESPN Plus article by Bill Connolly. If you have ESPN Plus, go look at his breakdown of expanded playoffs all the way back to 1963, I think it was, or something like that. It just screams perfection. He actually does go all the way up to 16 in that article, but I think 12 is perfect. And I think we're going to see on the field this fall just how perfect it is. And we're going to be kicking ourselves a little bit that 14, we expanded to it without even seeing 12 on the field first.
I agree. Just, you know, we talked about it. I wanted to get our parting shot in. I'll before I kick it to you, Garrett, I'll say this. Top five conference champs would get an automatic bid with 9 at large slots. So you do the quick math. That's going to likely be the 4 power conferences and their conference champion getting auto bid. So bid stealing is in effect, right? Hypothetically, you could have an 8-4 Iowa sneak up and get an undefeated Ohio State and just like that.
Which was really fun this past weekend on the basketball court. It made it a lot more dramatic.
That's true. I guess that's with division. So not technically that way, but you get the point. You can have bid thieves, secure a spot in the college football playoff. And then you'd have the next 9 top ranked teams get their slots. You know, some have said that this will include more G5 teams. Some have said it will exclude the G5. Garrett, do you have a leaning on which way that ends up going as we sit here, you know, 2.5 years out?
I, for one, am looking forward to the days that we get 12 of those teams being from, you know, the SEC or the Big Ten. I'm so looking forward to that. You know, you're mentioning, you know, an 8-4 Iowa sneaking in, and for a second I was like, what happened to the Big Ten that the top 2 records were undefeated and 8-4? I was a little bit concerned.
Don't worry about that.
Yeah, I was a little concerned. I was like, what happened to Oregon? We haven't even seen them in the conference. So, no, but I'm. You know, when we looked at the idea of moving to 12 and the reason we wanted to expand, it was, you know, a lot of the reason we've talked about on the channel is that you don't end up leaving anybody out, right? With 4, you know, there's always some, well, did you actually mess up? Is number 5 actually one of the better teams? And, you know, like with this last year, okay, well, you left out Georgia. You can't tell me they're not one of the best teams. And, you know, we left out Florida State, who really deserved it and everything else. With 12, you get the whole thing, right? You make sure that you cover it, right? We know that 10, 11, and 12 probably don't have a real shot, and, you know, probably they don't really deserve to be there. And, you know, they're just kind of grabbing onto those extra couple of seeds at the end. But, you know, just because you can add and grow stuff doesn't mean that you necessarily should. Yeah, we'll get more games. Yeah, there'll be more playoff games, I suppose, and that could be fun to watch. But, you know, at a certain point, we're just adding to add. It doesn't really match up with, like, the logistical growth curve and, like, making sure, like, hey, there's, like, a point where it evens off and we've kind of gotten the max value out of what we can actually expect. I think 12 is pretty much that max value where you can say, yeah, you're going to get everybody. There's going to be a couple teams that maybe don't deserve it. Maybe they could sneak up and grab somebody, but probably not. And, you know, unfortunately, now we're just going to add a couple more teams. And, you know, for all the people who are the anti-expansionists and are like, well, see, I told you. It's like, no, this isn't what we said. You know, if tomorrow the, you know, NCAA tournament and basketball decided, you know, we're going from 64 to 128, we wouldn't be like, well, you know, I'm sure glad we, you know, could have stuck to lower than 64. Like, 64 is the right number for basketball, and 12 is probably the right number for football.
I will say I don't think 14 is as bad as 16, though, so I'm thankful that we're not jumping all the way to 16.
Yes.
There's still going to be some battle for those 2 buys, and we do the bright spot. I'm just trying to look at this from all possible angles and maybe get a bright spot. We get 2 more games on campus, and 2 more teams get to host a game on campus as well. So that's what I'm trying to tell myself to tell myself that this is okay. And it's not 16. 16 is just doesn't make any sense. You don't reward the number one team other than playing the 16 seed.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, a lot of details still obviously to be figured out and finalized. As I mentioned earlier, this is awaiting a new TV deal before anything would become official. But the deals between the conferences and the college football playoff plus Notre Dame inking a deal with the college football playoff, it seems like this is all but certain. The financials, as we understand them, the SEC and the Big Ten would get $21 million of revenue share per year. The ACC would get $13 million. The Big 12 and Notre Dame get $12 million each, while the Group of Five schools get $1.8. That's up from $1.5 in the current agreement. So, you know,
it's just wild that Notre Dame is getting as much as the Big 12. That's insane.
I was going to say they finally found the end of the rainbow, apparently.
Notre Dame might have as many playoff appearances as the Big 12. We'll see how that all shakes out, especially if, you know, the detractors of this are saying, well, great, this just becomes an SEC versus Big 10 round robin, if you will. Maybe that's true. Maybe it's not. We'll see how everything plays out. You know, I'm hopeful that at least having playoff games on a college campus really brings some excitement to that first round of the playoffs. You know, and I don't know if competition wise, if we're really going to get a steep drop off between 12 and 14 teams, I kind of doubt it, but I think it's just the principle of it all, right? That we agreed on 12. And then before we've even seen that in action, there was a chance to make that much more money. And so we're going to do that. And we're just going to sign that deal into law. And you know, too many cooks in the kitchen, too many cooks in the kitchen. I think it all boils down to that. Let us know 12, 14, 16 BCS. I mean, heck, we've had conversations with BCS supporters in the past. So I'd love to know where you stand on all this at 3TechPod on YouTube in the comments. Hash it out. Let us know. And Twitter, Instagram as well.
As long as you don't think we should go back to the AP poll, we are open to your opinion. If you think we should go back to the AP poll crowning a champion, you are wrong, and we will tell you you're wrong.
Think some guys at the newspaper should choose the champion.
Newspaper writers that probably aren't even watching the games anyway. But
go,
you know, Trey,
that Bill Connelly article, man. It, like, if you need a trip down memory lane, yeah. Like, we crowned a champion in BYU that beat a 4-7 Pitt team and a 6-5 Michigan team and no other teams with a winning record, and said, yeah, that sounds good. National champs.
I mean, the Sugar Bowl fix early November, deciding, hey, we're going to bring the Hoos to town. The Cavs are coming to NOLA, baby. We're going to decide that early. Absolutely hose the rest of, you know, competition in the sport. Yeah. Broken system. So anyway, we won't be going back to that. Trey, we turn now to the reports from Tuscaloosa. And this is a fascinating conversation. You and I were talking about this a little bit, maybe a day or two ago, after listening to some other media outlets talk about it, discuss the rumors surrounding Kalen DeBoer, what he's going to do with the offense, what he's going to do with Jalen Milroe. Well, a couple days later, The Athletic comes out with an interview with Kalen DeBoer, kind of a state of affairs down there in Tuscaloosa. What's changed? What hasn't? What did you take away from that article? And, you know, what do you kind of see as the status quo now for Alabama? What can they expect with Kalen DeBoer?
Well, he's going to run his offense, it seems like, right? And I think it's going to be, there's obviously going to be some tweaks. I think he's a good enough coach to know that you need to coach to the players that you have and not just try to fit a square peg in the round hole if it's not going to work. But what I'm really concerned about, and what I even told you, Mitch, before this article even came out, is do we think Jalen Milroe can run what Michael Penix Jr. ran at Indiana and at Washington, right? That just seems like, to me, to a very untrained eye, two very different styles of quarterback. You know, you got Jalen Milroe, who's a fantastic athlete, a really good college quarterback, but not as polished of a passer. He has a howitzer of an arm. He can chuck it downfield 80 yards maybe if he gets to step into it a little bit. But the accuracy, the mid-range game that was such a big part of Michael Penix's success at Washington, I just don't see it on what Jalen Milroe's put on tape. That doesn't mean he can't learn it. That doesn't mean he can't develop it under Kalen DeBoer, because Kalen DeBoer has shown that he can develop quarterbacks really, really well. But what we've seen already gives me a little bit of cause of concern. I don't know that he's the guy to run that offense. And it's going to be really interesting as spring ball heats up, summer practices, the reports we get out of Tuscaloosa of how that marriage ends up working.
Garrett, it's fascinating because you look at what Kalen DeBoer has had recent success with, and it's big arm quarterbacks, but they're pocket passers. They've got their feet work all aligned. They know how to jump from read to read, right? It's not a lot of mental processing back there trying to extend the play. Although Penix, you know, certainly had brief glimpses of that, but typically he was getting the ball out quick, or they had something designed where the scheme took the safety away and Penix was able to throw that ball deep. That's not necessarily the MO of Jalen Milroe. And so even though DeBoer's quoted in this article saying he's open to relearning, he's working, he's in there in the facility at 4 a.m. He's the first one in, last one out, you know, real gym rat, great coach speak. He's open and willing to relearn all of that, but it certainly hasn't stopped the rumor mill from swirling that, oh, well, DeBoer's clearly got to go in a different direction. Do you give any validity to that, or is the tide still headed in the right direction with Jalen as QB1?
They should head that direction with Jalen. And we talked about this a little bit last year. The amount that he grew from the beginning of the season to the end of the season was remarkable. The work that he put in, the coaching he received, amazing what he was able to do from basically starting the season as this guy with, you know, a huge arm and no accuracy to, if you watch some of those games at the end of the season, especially a couple passes he made in the Rose Bowl, there were some really, really impressive shots that he took, and not just deep shots, but I mean, really, really good mid-range, really, really good sort of, you know, towards the sideline, needs to hit a guy in a tight window, and he does. And look, that's against an amazing Michigan defense, so obviously not the best day for him. But, you know, who's not going to have a pretty rough day against Michigan's defense from last year? Aside from that, the work that he's put in, the athleticism that he brings to the table, his ability to extend plays, his ability to create on his own, if they're giving that away and they're going to say, well, like, no, it doesn't really fit our scheme, then somebody else in college football is about to become much, much richer at the quarterback position when Jalen Milroe transfers to their team, because he's good enough to play at, I would say, you know, 95 to 99% of the schools that he could transfer to. There's a few quarterbacks across the country you could maybe argue are better, but I think he's one of the best quarterbacks in the country. And I think that if you are DeBoer and you're, you know, coming in and you're having to figure out roster transition and you're figuring out all these new pieces and how to work with the fan base and the boosters and everything else, and you're the new guy at Alabama, what a blessing to be able to have a guy like Jalen Milroe in your locker room who's saying, okay, I've done it before. I've been through the grind of an SEC schedule and I succeeded. I got all the way up to the playoff. I won the conference last year. That's amazing for him to be able to do. If they let him walk out the door for somebody else, that's, I think, a big misstep. And I think that he is more than capable of adjusting his play style, adjusting his skill set, and working on his game enough to be able to find success in this offense.
So I've got a question for y'all. Whoever wants to take this first, go for it. And Garrett, maybe this is the start of a clip. Does Alabama need to look themselves in the mirror and learn from the Jalen Hurts experience, where we pushed another mobile quarterback out, had a rocket of an arm, but wasn't a pocket passer? We pushed him out in favor of a pocket passing quarterback, and Hurts went on to have obviously a tremendous rest of his collegiate career. He's a all-pro in the NFL. Just because a quarterback doesn't quote-unquote fit your system doesn't mean that he can't win you ball games or have an extremely high ceiling. Is that fair to compare to Jalen Milroe's situation right now?
I think that's a really fair comparison. I actually really like the comparison. The difference is you're not guaranteed to have a Tua behind him. We think we know, like, hey, there's some good players behind him. There's some highly recruited guys behind him. Tua was a different level talent with passing the football and just his ability and his touch and everything else. If you think that you can guaranteed bank on that being behind him, okay, let him walk. If you're not 100% sure about that, again, you know, Hurts is a guy who took them to the playoff and you know, ultimately, you know, doesn't end up you know, finishing any of those or winning any of those, which, you know, kind of sucks for him. But it's a different story, I think, with Milroe because of the situation around him, right? It's not, I don't think, the same Alabama roster that they've had. They definitely don't have the quarterback behind him like Tua. And I think that this is a chance for them to, again, like I just said, like, take the blessing, take the fact that you've got an experienced quarterback and a crazy talented quarterback who has a huge arm. Like, a lot of Washington's offense, like we kind of noticed last year, was just like, ah, oh, well, Rome's down there somewhere. And it's just kind of chucked it up. And that was it. And so, like, I think Bama might have a guy or two on that roster who could say, hey, like, he can just run fast and just get down the field and we could just chuck it up to him and see what happens. Like, there's a couple of those guys on the roster. Yeah, there's some speedsters on the roster. So like Alabama's going to be fine if they don't step in it. I think DeBoer is a good enough coach to realize that. Obviously, you're not going to come out and just endorse a guy point blank because maybe he can't, right? He can't pick up your system. But assuming that, you know, Milroe's not completely incompetent and assuming everything that we've seen about him doesn't stop, right, that he can't just all of a sudden not learn a new offense. Assuming that's not true, then we're going to be fine. And you know, Milroe's going to go in there and he's going to do his thing.
I agree. And I totally agree that we saw him develop a lot on the field last fall. I think a lot of that was the Alabama coaching staff realizing maybe the mistake they did make with Jalen Hurts. I know it was completely different coaching staff from 2016 or whatever to 2023, but I think it was realizing, hey, we can't fit this square peg Jalen Milroe into the round hole of what we want to do on offense. And we don't have anybody else on the roster that can do that, can run the offense better. So we're going to tailor our play calling. We're going to tailor our strategy to his strengths. We're going to run the ball. We're going to use his legs and we're going to chuck it downfield when we're opportunistic. That's just, there was a lot of chucking it downfield on Washington's offense last year, but it was a ton of intermediate passing, multiple reads. You know, I just don't know that what we saw on the field is going to be playing to his strengths as well as what the Bama coaching staff last year was willing to do. Now, it's going to mean Kalen DeBoer is just going to have to make a decision. Does he want to be a coach that has a system and only runs that system no matter what players he has? Or does he want to fit the players he has to, or does he want to fit his system to the players that he has? He's just going to have to make that choice. And I think when you're at a school like Washington, it's a little bit easier to run a system, right? I think back to, you know, when Mike Leach was at Texas Tech, he had a ton of quarterbacks, and even at Washington State and Mississippi State as well, he had a ton of quarterbacks that ran that system well. They didn't do a lot in the NFL. None of them were wildly successful other than maybe Gardner Minshew had his moment in the sun. But like,
say Gardner Minshew's bank account would disagree with that, sir.
Hey, he has made a lot of money. I think Graham Harrell made some nice money as a backup.
He did.
Cliff Kingsbury did too. But none of them were stars in the NFL, even though they put up 6,000 yards a year in college. They were system quarterbacks, and it worked at a smaller school. When you're at a school like Alabama, you are not going to be restrained to find a system quarterback. You're going to be able to go out and find an NFL-ready arm that's ready to go, or an NFL-ready athlete like Jalen Milroe. So he's just going to have to make a choice. What type of coach does he want to be? Does he want to be a guy that runs his system no matter what, or does he want to tailor it to the players that he has on the field? I think he's going to be the latter. And I think you're going to see some adjustments that made Jalen Milroe work. But if they try to force him into what Michael Penix was doing last year, I just don't know that that's the best decision.
Well, Trey, you know, you said it there. You don't have to be a system guy if you're at Alabama. You don't have to be just like a system coach who's got his thing. He doesn't have to be like, you know, like you're saying, Leach or like Lincoln Riley or someone, right? He doesn't have to be that kind of a coach who just, he's got his system. He knows what works for him and he goes with it. You're at Alabama. You can recruit with the best of them, go get the best players across the country. You can go get the best talent across the board, and then it's on you to pick amazing coaches and to pick, you know, a great staff and put a whole program together. He doesn't need to run a system. He needs to run the program, and I think he can do that. Like, I think he's the right guy for the job. I think he's capable of doing that, but, like, if he falls into the mistake of, no, this is my playbook, like, this is what works, I'm 100%, you know, this is me. We've seen that fail for a lot of coaches where there's loads of coaches that just go in and they say, this is my playbook. I know what I'm doing. I've done this. I've had success, da 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 da. And they don't change and they don't adjust. We've seen that happen to so many different coaches and it's crashed and burned. And I really hope DeBoer doesn't make the same mistake and, you know, go and say like, well, this is my square hole and I'm going to force the round peg and I'm going to make sure that that has to happen. Like he doesn't need to do that. He can do whatever he wants to. He's at Alabama.
It's fair. I went down a glorious rabbit trail in the couple moments after Trey just slandered the Pirates' quarterback development skills. Relived the career of
college development. They were great.
College quarterbacks.
Listen, tell you what, man. The New York Giants thought they found something there in Davis Webb for a hot second. And it didn't exactly pan out.
We all thought we found something with Davis Webb.
Was he a Leach guy or was Leach already gone when Davis Webb was there?
He was there. I'm pretty sure he was there at the start of his career overlapped with Leach. I could be wrong about that, but he just felt like a Leach guy to me. Yeah. So maybe I'm misremembering that. But fun player in college at Tech and then transferred to Cal and had a huge season at 6'5" for the Bears. And man, I really thought he might pan out in the NFL, at least do something. Didn't end up getting it done. I think all of your points are spot on. I really want to see Milroe get a fair shake, and I think he will. He's a tremendous athlete. Guys, remember, he went from losing the job at South Florida to being on the Heisman board late down the stretch of the season, right? I mean, fourth and Milroe had the nation buzzing that, hey, Jalen's the guy. Jalen can take Alabama into an SEC championship game and beat Georgia. He went and did that. Didn't get it done in the playoff, but he's got a whole new season ready to go. And I think folks were largely still on his bandwagon, largely thinking, hey, this could work again for Alabama heading into a 12-team playoff with Nick Saban. Really, the only thing that's changed is the head man coaching and obviously a little bit more of a progressive system. I think in practicality, there's a good chance that a lot of those same Alabama looks still exist because there is a pro style to DeBoer's offense. But I'm excited to see what it looks like in Tuscaloosa. I know one of the doctors I work with, boy, he can't get enough what Kalen DeBoer is doing. All the reports coming out of T-Town, we're pumping hopium right back into the Crimson Tide fan base, man. They were at low tide there for a little bit.
I think we might be focusing on the wrong position, guys. I think Jalen just needs a center to snap him the ball, and he's going to be fine. Did y'all see the tweet that tracked the most botched snaps last year?
Oh, no.
Yes, that was crazy.
Shout out Parker Fleming, Stats of War on Twitter. Great follow. 21 botched snaps by Alabama last year. Led the country. I don't know if you guys are big math people. I know Garrett's a little bit more than you and I, Mitch, but that is well over one per game. That is not good.
Well, I think those were like had an effect on the play, bad snaps. Yeah,
not even just slightly off target. That is like,
yeah, that was like, it was such a bad snap that it affected the play to become a negative efficiency type of thing. Like it was insane. Well, because it was like Alabama was at one, and then it was like a bunch of teams that had like just garbage seasons at like 2, 3, 4, 5. Yeah,
I got it pulled up. It's Buffalo at 2 with 20, Houston and Tech tied for 3rd at 15, Louisiana and Texas A&M and Sam Houston tied for 5th at 14.
Oh, God.
Right, so nobody
A&M had to be up there.
And the fact that Alabama was in the playoff anyways and was quite literally a bad snap away from maybe winning a title. True. Like, exactly to that. And of course, everyone's going to focus on that one. But, like, again, that's not Milroe's fault, right? He can't control where the ball's coming when it's, you know, getting snapped to him. If it's, you know, at his feet, he's got to just scoop that thing and try to make something out of it.
McLaughlin might deserve a minor in bowling for as many snaps rolled back to the quarterback. But hey,
I got the spell.
Not Alabama's problem anymore. Will Howard, step on up, buddy. McLaughlin's up in Columbus. Might be, boy, wouldn't that be terrible? We're talking about Ohio State being a national championship favorite and McLaughlin snapping gutter balls.
That has to make the preview show when we do that one. Got to write that one down.
No. Oh, gosh. I mean, risk versus reward there is something. Certainly not rooting against the kid, but back of the napkin math is not good. So let us know where you have Jalen Milroe. Should he be quarterback one of the Alabama Crimson Tide? I'd assume so for this season for sure. Or are you more excited about the Austin Macks of the world that have transferred in? It's Kalen DeBoer's guy, came in from Washington, highly recruited quarterback. Who ultimately is going to lead the Tide back to the promised land? Let us know at 3TechPod on all of our social channels. Nebraska, gentlemen, we'll close the show with this. Really strange move for the Cornhuskers, who seemed like they were on the comeback trail, not only in football, but really all athletic departments. And then Trev Alberts, who's a legend there, has his jersey in the rafters. Guys, we're talking about a former member of the black shirts, an All-American linebacker for the Cornhuskers, leaves the athletic director role at his alma mater for the same position at Texas A&M. Nebraska had just doubled his salary. It's a very confusing move for all of those who are Husker fans. And not only does Matt Rhule feel a little bit in the lurch, heard him in a press conference today having to say, no, I'm here. Don't worry about that. Doesn't matter. The guy that just hired me walked out the door, but I'm here. But it also feels like it affects the momentum of the school in general. I mean, they've been making waves in volleyball. Heck, basketball's back in the tournament. Baseball's showing some life. This is a really strange move. And as we were talking about it before the show, yes, I think there's a chance that it really works out for A&M, a program that just needs stability from the top down. But a questionable move, and if you're Nebraska, where do you go from here? You're on the doorstep of relevance again, and man, one of your local legends leaves.
I have a question for y'all, and this is not to diminish Trev Alberts or anybody else in this position. How much on a scale of 1 to 10 do you guys think the athletic director actually matters?
I think it matters a lot more if they're bad than if they're good. I think a good athletic director kind of keeps the ship going in the same direction, and it can be a really good thing. But I think if it's like bad and you have a bad athletic director, that can actually crater program. So like,
as an individual, would you say like if they are 70% or better good at their job, I'm just throwing a number out there, like they're a 7 out of 10 or better, like the difference between 7 and 10 doesn't really matter, but if they're in
I would say, yeah, marginal differences probably, because like there'll obviously be like strategic things, or maybe like he's got good connections, he can make good hires. But the other thing about it too is, you know, you can't compare apples and oranges anywhere. You know, Nebraska is not the same place as Texas A&M, for example, right? Like they're two very different colleges, very different resources, different histories, different conferences, different parts of the country. And so when you think about what it takes to win at either place, it's going to be a different answer. And so when you're in, I guess, Trev Alberts' position, I don't know if he's, you know, in a weird spot where he's like, maybe something was going on behind the scenes we didn't see. Maybe with all this new change in college athletics, he was getting really frustrated at a lot of stuff. But I mean, I can't imagine. They have incredible support of the programs. It seems like, you know, all the people in Nebraska really want to buy in to seeing their teams succeed in whatever aspect it is. And so I can't imagine that would be the issue. It feels weird anytime somebody would leave an alma mater in a place where you're basically a legend. So that makes me wonder, like, is something up behind the scenes? I just have no idea. Maybe it's just, you know, he thought he had accomplished all he could in Nebraska, and he said, like, I made some good hires. I've been here a little while. You know, I'm gonna go.
I think he's only been there 3 years, right?
He hasn't been there that long.
I have no idea at this point. I have no clue why you would leave this place that, you know, you've kind of become a legend in, this place that, you know, means so much to you. I mean, it seems like it means so much to him, and it clearly meant a lot to the fans, because the backlash on some of their message boards was dramatic. And so I don't know.
I'm sure it was just a coincidence that Texas A&M and Nebraska matched up in not just the men's tournament first round, but also the women's tournament first round.
Back to back Trev Alberts Bulls. Listen, I've worked for 3 different athletic directors in my career. Right. And, to be fair, all 3 of them I would consider good at their jobs. Some better than others, for sure. But all 3 of them had a clear vision. All 3 of them had a plan to get there. And all 3 of them saw marked improvement in the athletics landscape under their watch. And so I'll say this, like, internally, at a bigger school like a Nebraska or a Texas A&M, a lot of the athletic director's roles are so big picture and now focused on funding, right? NIL, what's the next shiny thing that we can go upgrade? At the smaller school level where I cut my teeth, you know, at the Division II level, you're a lot more in the weeds. You still have to do all the fundraising and you have to be the face of the athletic department, but a lot of it is really digging into the details. Whereas at a bigger school, you're going to have a staff that helps you with that. And you've got director of this and, you know, assistant manager of that. But I'll still say the athletic director plays an integral part in having a healthy, functioning varsity athletics environment. I think, you know, and I texted you guys this, you look at Texas, you look at Alabama, you look at Georgia, the great programs right now, they're typically not just good in one sport. They're typically thumping down the door of a national championship in multiple sports, right? And so much of that starts and is fueled by unity in the athletic department. From the president on down, and the athletic director obviously plays a massive role in the way that the athletics in general are a part of the university. Because we've seen universities that just don't really support their athletic departments, right? I mean, Stanford's a famous example where they were going to cut 30 varsity programs and the athletic department kind of stood on its head and said, absolutely not. The players, you know, were getting ready to boycott everything. They were kind of publicly protesting with t-shirts and stuff like that. And the university kind of backed down. So there's a great example of, hey, when things aren't unified, you have a lot of really uncomfortable conversations and a really tough look publicly when everything is streamlined and there's a clear strategy with a roadmap to get to a goal. I think those athletic departments ultimately put championship contenders on the field way more than those, like, you know, on the other side of this, Texas A&M, hey man, we're hoping that the new president, Mark Walsh, now working with Alberts, we're just hoping for consistency in College Station. That's something that we haven't had in over a decade now, right? And it's shown itself on the football field. So long answer to say, you need a great athletic director at the very least to be an ambassador for your program and to be the rudder for the ship that allows football to go out and dominate, that allows basketball to be a national title contender, et cetera.
Yeah. And it seems like, you know, that I love your experience with that, Mitch. And I love that you're able to answer that question from real experience, and Garrett, great thoughts as well. It's just interesting to see from the outside looking in. You can definitely tell when a school has that unity and when they don't. That unity that you're talking about, it's very easy to see when a school has that and when they don't. And it's very easy to see when the athletic director has lost control of the boosters or the, you know, president or the whoever, chancellor, whatever it is, whoever's in charge, board of regents. There's so many different things that they have to manage as part of that job. I would argue that they're definitely not the ones making the final call at schools like Nebraska and A&M for the football coach, probably, right? Can we agree on that? I don't think that they're necessarily hiring or firing the football coach, but outside
not
of that,
unilaterally, right? That should go through the board of regents.
They're a seat at the table, but they're a vote that counts as one of who knows how many. It depends on how dysfunctional your athletic department is, probably.
Depends on the athletic director, right? You've got a one that's doing their job well, their weight or their vote carries so much weight versus you got a dead man walking and nobody cares.
Right. And it's interesting because it does seem like Alberts was building something really good at Nebraska, not just football. Matt Rhule, we know he can turn around. He got them super close to a bowl game in year one, which no one was expecting. Fred Hoiberg at the basketball program, the women's basketball program, was right there with Caitlin Clark in Iowa. Baseball is ranked for the first time in a long time under Will Bolt. It's a really good thing they've got going. Volleyball, all their Olympic sports seem to be doing a lot better. So very interesting timing. You can, Garrett, you mentioned the Nebraska fan base is kind of in shambles on Twitter, filling up Albert's replies anytime he tweets. And they're left just wondering, I guess, where they're going from here. And I think they need a guy that's going to bring some innovation and not just stability, but innovation to that space as they bring new competition into that conference.
Well, and not just their fan base. I don't know if you saw the governor made a statement on the whole thing and his call to action. He had a whole call to action, and he said something along the lines of, like, the university is bigger than any one person. I'm extremely disappointed in his decision. Like, when you get the governor desk involved in this whole thing, like, something's happened. So Yeah, it's kind of a catastrophe for Nebraska.
When A&M lost Scott Woodward, we were disappointed, I think.
Sure.
And it's definitely different because Scott Woodward was not an Aggie. He came from Washington. He was not, you know, our favorite.
Didn't play at A&M, like, yeah.
Didn't play it and didn't grow up in Texas. But we were mad, and I think a lot of people vented. But the vitriol that this man is receiving for leaving Nebraska is just something else. I don't think I've ever seen this for an athletic director. Seen it for players, seen it for coaches, but not an athletic director.
I was going to say, interesting kind of side on that is that the Aggies also stole the Kansas State legend, Colin Klein, this offseason as well. So it's kind of interesting that the Aggies just seem to be going in and poaching a lot of people's stuff and just being like, oh, you're legend at your school? Yeah, he's mine now. And I know everyone's just going to blame it on money, but I'm sure that's not the only factor.
The corn and soy capitals of our country really do not like the cattle ranchers down in College Station right now.
Oil barons.
The oil barons, yeah, exactly. We got a war of resources happening right now. Let us know. Say that again.
It's a game of Catan, and we're all just watching it.
Exactly. Exactly. Right. Meanwhile, Georgia's just building the longest road, just, you know, very quietly going around the border, and they're gonna rack up all the victory points here at the end. Great episode. Let us know what you think about this. Do you care about the athletic director wars of 2024? Where were you when Trev Albers decided he was going to College Station? Write in. Let us know your feedback. As we mentioned earlier, 14 team playoff, what you would do with quarterback situation from Alabama as well. For Trey Reeves, for Garrett Turney, I'm Mitch Mason. Thanks so much for hanging out with us. Until next time, so long, everybody.
Gracious, yep. How about